Okay. Well, what a blessing. Okay, this morning, looking at Revelation chapter 2, I'm going to move on to the next church, but something that I wanted to talk about for a little bit before that is a word that I overheard here about a week and a half ago that, as they say, a light bulb went on in my mind. Light bulb. Brother Ken talked here about fervent charity, having fervent charity, and the importance that that is. I was riding along somewhere and listening to someone, and this person made a comment about equipping our children to head out into an indifferent world. And I got thinking about that and realized just how true that statement is. And then as I thought about it, it really got my mind going and thinking about why love is so important. The world really is a cruel and indifferent place. And Jesus, the words of Jesus recorded by John and others, the words of Jesus often repeated by John, where they talk about love one another. Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples." And so love is very much a defining characteristic of those who are followers of Jesus. Now, the world thinks they know what love is. Many people experience what they call love, and they do, in many ways, I believe, experience the emotion of love. But the love that Jesus wants us to have goes far beyond that. And there are a bunch of different stories that illustrate the difference. And it really helped me to think about the seriousness of when Jesus said, "You've left your first love," how that then plays out. I believe that when we leave our first love, which is when the love of Christ fills our heart, if we move away from that, what replaces it? That's indifference. And I've often heard say that the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. Well, I guess you could look at that in different ways. I don't know if y'all ever heard the name Ira Hayes, and this is a story to illustrate the indifference of the world. Ira Hayes was a Native American born and raised on a reservation, and he grew up, he enlisted in the Army, and was part of the action in World War II. He was actually a part of the Battle of Iwo Jima. And those who read history and are interested in such things know that there was a battle fought for an island in the Pacific Ocean. The Japanese held it, and the United States military thought that that was important to have. And so they decided they needed to take that island. On that island was a mountain, Mount Suribachi. If I have the pronunciation right, but y'all probably won't look it up anyway, so it doesn't matter. That battle was fought on that mountain. It was a very hard-fought battle. They were fighting an enemy who would rather die than surrender, and so it was a very hard-fought battle. But they finally reached the top. They took the mountain, and there is an iconic photo out there of five or six Marines planting a flag on top of that mountain. And Ira Hayes was one of those men. And he survived the battle and was part of that famous photograph planting the flag. And after the military, he was celebrated and went to speeches and appearances and dinners and whatnot all. He was very famous. But as time went on, people started forgetting. He started drinking and drinking and drinking. Occasionally somebody would get him and clean him up for another dinner because he was a big attraction and would help in fundraisers. But those kind of stopped as time went on. And one night he was out drinking. On his way home, he passed out, fell into a ditch. And there in that ditch, he got hypothermia and died. And here's this famous man, dies in a ditch. And the world really didn't care. He wasn't that well known anymore. And so he dies. This man who had done these famous things dies a drunkard in a ditch and in an indifferent world. Another story that very much illustrates the way the world is the story of the prodigal son. It's a very familiar story, a story of one who, when he had money, had lots of friends, lots of people wanted his attention, lots of fun things to do, but when the money ran out, the world turned his back on him and he ends up in a pig pen. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. It truly is an indifferent world when a person has nothing left to give. Lots of political and even religious leaders are indifferent as well. You can see that in stories. Those who want to hold on to position when people are available to use and can be used for their power or position, they use them, but otherwise they are indifferent to the person. In Jewish law, in the Old Testament, there was a law that said that if a man died and there was no man there to witness his death, his wife couldn't be considered a widow. She was an abandoned woman. And as such, she couldn't remarry. She could be there, see her husband die. Everybody could see that he's dead. But if a man didn't witness him dying, she was considered an abandoned woman. And some of the rabbis in the Old Testament held on to that very strongly, very indifferent to the need of the person. And those who sought to change it were vilified. But that's just an illustration of where someone is indifferent to a person. With stories of things like that happen in the Amish church, stories like that in Catholicism, in radical Islam, Sharia law, there are lots of things that are held on to very strongly and very indifferent to the needs of the person. And you could look at that. You can find it in so many places when you look for those stories. The only faith, or the only religion, if you want to call it that, that has a leader that died for his people is the Christian faith. That is those who follow Jesus. And Jesus was the leader. He was the example of what it means to lay down one's life for others. No greater love has no man than this, than that a man lay down his life for his friends. And Jesus showed his divinity by rising again, showing his power over death. And in that group of Jesus followers, we are not encouraged to seek position, power, or wealth, but rather the highest thing that we can attain to is love and the service that follows love. Corinthians tells us, now abideth faith, hope, and charity, but the greatest of these is love. Faith will one day realize a fulfillment. There will be an end to faith. Hope as well. Hope that is realized and seen. But love, charity, will endure forever. And so that is the highest thing that we can work for and achieve, because that truly follows the example of Jesus. Think about the story of the woman that was taken in adultery They brought her to Jesus, the scribes, Pharisees, whoever that was that brought her. They were seeking to reinforce their own position and seeking to find a reason to accuse Jesus. And so they brought this woman and suggested to Jesus that Moses said such a person should be stoned. And Jesus very quickly switched the tables, so to speak, and had them looking at their own lives. And he really turned that around because Jesus understood the person that was brought. And Jesus cared about that person. Jesus cared about what was going on in the heart of that person. She was a pawn in the hands of the game that the Pharisees were playing. But Jesus saw the person while they were indifferent to that person. The Samaritan woman at the well, ever wonder why she came to the well by herself? That's one part of the story we don't talk about. She was ostracized by her village because of the choices she had made in life. She was rejected. And they had no way of dealing with the true needs of her heart. Somehow Jesus knew. And Jesus came to that well expecting a meeting with her, and she came to that well by herself because nobody else would hang out with her. None of the other women would, because she didn't fit societal norms, we could say. Jesus saw the needs of her heart. And while her village was indifferent to her as a person, Jesus reached out in love. The woman with the issue of blood, same way. Through things she could not control, she was rejected. Any man that touched her was unclean for a time. And so she as well was pushed away. Jesus knew how to address the needs of her heart. Jesus loved her. And the man at the pool laid there for how many years? 30-some years? Everybody else gave up. This guy will never make it. And so they became indifferent. But Jesus somehow knew that that man was there. And Jesus, in love, went and found him and addressed his needs. The blind man along the road hears a crowd coming and realized Jesus was coming. And he started yelling. He was going to have Jesus' attention that day. Everybody else's people around him were like, shh, stop it. Stop it. Jesus is busy. Indifferent to his needs, because Jesus is so important. But Jesus heard his cry and singled him out. The man among the tombs appears as though the pigs were more important than he was to the people of that country. But Jesus saw his need and addressed his need. The Gentile woman with her child that came to Jesus and pleaded for help, she was rejected by the Jews because she was from the wrong society. Jesus saw her faith. And even though she didn't fit amongst the Jews, Jesus ministered to her heart. The centurion was another. Same thing. And we know that Jesus is Jesus. He can see and he can know people's hearts. But I give those stories to illustrate how people, because it doesn't fit, because they're not from the right place, or they don't look right or dress right, we can be indifferent. The love of Jesus, if our heart isn't filled up with the love of Jesus, we can be indifferent and we can miss those who are actually crying out for help, those who are seeking for help. There are many that are not. And we don't have the eyes, the knowledge of Jesus, but he wants to put some of his self in us to help us to connect with those needs around us. But if his love doesn't fill our hearts, it's so easy to be indifferent to needs. And yes, so many needs and so many hard people and so many people around us that are unwilling to hear truth have a way of wearing us down. But again, I don't think we can stress enough the importance of Jesus' love. Above all, have fervent charity. It is a bad direction for believers when things and emotions change the heart and Christ's love in us shifts because indifference sets in. And that was a call out to the Ephesian church to draw their attention back to where they had been, and it is a call to us. And the question that I would have for myself, am I as blind to the indifference in my heart as some of these people in these stories are? I don't know. But I believe it's a question that we can all ask. Am I blind to the indifference in my heart? Am I as blind to that as were the Jewish leaders? The prodigal son's father, what did he do? He stayed home and he prayed and he waited for the day that his son would return to him. And thankfully, God used the cold indifference of the world to work change in that young man's life. And he returned to his father, and his father's prayers were answered. And we see in scriptures, Jesus went and sought out some people, just like the Samaritan woman, the man at the pool. Jesus went and found them, and he spoke into the needs of their hearts. Other people came looking for Jesus, believing that Jesus had the answers. And that is really a blessing to see and to consider. Jesus never condoned sin or evil, but he also never rejected a repentant, receptive person because of who they were, where they came from, or what they did. Love is the outstanding characteristic of a Jesus follower, and that is what we are called to be, and we are to have that outstanding characteristic in an indifferent world. We are called to be different. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples. And so, something to consider. This world is an indifferent world to the true needs of people. And that is the warning that comes to us because we have a tendency to allow society to affect who we are and how we look. Look at others. Okay, looking at the church in Smyrna. Unto the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. I know thy works and tribulation and poverty, but thou art rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Fear none of those things which thou shalt suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that ye may be tried, and ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. Here, I guess, for a title of this one, I have Overcoming Anxiety with Peace. Overcoming anxiety with peace. Have y'all ever felt anxious? Would you feel anxious if you knew today someone could kick down the doors and arrest us and put him in prison? And if you had a leadership role in this group, you probably would die if they caught you. Would that cause some anxiety? I bet for a bunch of us. There probably would be some anxiety as we worshiped. And this church, I believe, perhaps they were dealing with some of that. Again, I forgot to make copies of my map. But if you look at a modern-day map of Turkey, it kind of comes up around and Ephesus is right here, and up here there's a bit of a peninsula that comes out, and then a natural harbor. And right, I didn't intend to make that look like a face, but it kind of does, doesn't it? Right in the back here was where Smyrna was. And so it's about 25 miles away from Ephesus. Ephesus was very well to do. Smyrna is was a very beautiful and very prosperous city, but very intense persecution. So to be a believer there was very difficult to work, and so they were a very poor church. So what stands out in your mind about the message to this church? Anyone have any thoughts?
It sounds like he's telling them they're going to be arrested and tortured for 10 days and then killed. It's a quick knowledge to have ahead of time.
Yeah, it is. I think that likely that was going on, and likely that's what they had to look forward to. So, yeah, several different things there that I think we do well to notice. Anyone else? That's right. We should make that number one. Number one. No rebuke. No rebuke. Number two, they were very persecuted. Anyone else? I kind of came up with my own list. Number three, they were encouraged to confidence. They were encouraged to confidence. And then number four, we can clearly see God's values. Versus human values. God's values versus human. And then the next one that I noticed is that they had a group that actually worked against believers while claiming to be religious, actually worked against them. So Satan's synagogue will, I don't know how to write that, but anyway, that's what that means, Satan's synagogue. And then the next one that I noticed is that faith will enable you to die well. How's that for encouragement? And so imagine meeting here today and having that anxiety of knowing that somebody could come in and arrest us, and the message to you being not have faith, God will help you escape, but have faith that will help you to die well. And I suppose one more that we should have is the promise. The promise to those who have the faith that will enable them to die well, that the reward will be worth it. Once you get to that point, you're not going to wish yourself back. And so those are things that I couldn't help but notice. And in the message there to this group, and I think they're very important things to notice. It's interesting, if you look at the history of that city, it is now called, where did I write that? Izmir is the name of the city now. And that city has been destroyed and rebuilt and destroyed and rebuilt and destroyed and rebuilt. I don't know how many times. It's interesting that Jesus said, these things saith the first and the last, which was dead and is alive. I don't know if that's a reference to the city and its history, but currently the city of Izmir has, in the center of a highly populated area, there are the ruins of the old city of Smyrna, and it's a historic ruins. And so it is still a city where people live. But here we have extreme poverty of the believers. We have persecution. And here the message comes to them with no rebuke and only gives them encouragement. And we notice the words there where he says, I know your works, your tribulation, and your poverty, but you are rich. You are rich. And there we can clearly see that God's values are not what human values are. We value comfort. I guess we do. You don't like to be comfortable, don't we? I do. We like comfort. And really, the way to that comfort is money. So we like being able to do reasonably well with our income and be comfortable. But here, there is no promise of comfort other than the promise of eternal comfort and eternal life. And so that is interesting to notice. They struggled with a religious group here. I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. It would appear as there were those of a religious group who claimed to be holding to their religion, but were actually well connected to the Roman leaders. Lots of money enabled them to exist and do well, and they actually worked against the true believers, often reporting them to the authorities. So they had that difficulty as well, perhaps having difficulty knowing who was on their side and who was actually working against them. And what I see here is just a reminder of again that it doesn't matter what we're up against or what our situation is. God sees and God understands. And in every difficult situation that we might have that we think is such a hard situation, God truly understands what's going on, and he speaks encouragement. He wants to speak encouragement into our situation. Not a promise of sunny skies and fair weather and easy living, but rather it is a promise of faithfulness. Will get us a reward that will be well worth any price that we pay. There is a reminder here that faith is what will enable us to die well. Fear none of those things which you shall suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, that you may be tried, and ye shall have tribulation 10 days. Be thou faithful unto death, and I will give thee a crown of life. Encouragement, again, to this church to continue on to be faithful. So let's think about anxiety for a little bit. And I don't feel like I am very qualified to speak about anxiety. There's been times that I was scared. There's been times that I laid awake at night worrying, being anxious. But I've never faced a life-threatening situation that I was really scared of. I've never been faced with the possibility of dying. I know every day is a possibility to die, but I've never had cancer or my wife's always been very healthy, and so I haven't had those kinds of things to worry about. I usually figure out something to be anxious about, yes, but it's really little things. Get anxious about getting up and speaking sometimes, you know, just stuff like that. What does anxiety do in our life? Often anxiety or fear will cause us to be frustrated, maybe lash out in frustration because of situations that people bring about or things that are happening beyond our control. We would like to do something, and human nature often drives us to do something that is unproductive. I came across a funny little story about a woman who, she was in some electronics job that she thought was very secure, but she suddenly got laid off. And all of a sudden, she didn't know how she was going to pay for her beautiful house in California. All these plans that she had made for her life, suddenly she lost her high-paying job, and she was scared, very anxious to say the least, and she started acting out in frustration, breaking things, smashing things. And then she thought, a bunch of other people have got laid off as well. I bet they'd like to smash things too. And so she started this business called Tantrum LLC. People could pay her to come and break things. So she had appliances, TVs, microwaves, you know, clay, bowls, statues, all kinds of stuff in this room. And they could come and rent hammers, sledgehammers, clubs, whatever. And they'd pay a certain amount for a certain amount of time to break things. And she did extremely well. And Tantrums, LLC. And what is it? It's a way of working off frustration and anxiety. Interesting thought, but not really productive. What are we to do with anxiety? What are we to do with fear? And yes, this church was dealing with a pretty extreme reason to be anxious. But again, I want to remind us that God knows all of the things that we deal with that would cause anxiety, and He wants to speak into that. And He does that in many ways. And I have to admit that I find it hard sometimes to speak encouragement into people's lives when, you know, I don't really know. There's so many things that play into fear and anxiety. And I believe that the words of Jesus will impact that very, very much. To go back to this little business called Tantrum LLC, this woman later on, through spiritual help and through medical help, got her life back in shape. And she gives testimony to the power of Jesus working in her life along with some medical help to help her get through that. So praise the Lord for that testimony. Romans chapter 8, verse 1. Can someone quote that verse?
I'll teach you there.
That's 12:1. It's a good one, though. There is therefore now.
That's right.
There is therefore now no condemnation to them which walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. Condemnation, that's probably outside of the realm of what type of anxiety would be being experienced here in this church, but that kind of anxiety can be a part of what we think about. And that verse there is a very good reminder to us that there is no condemnation to those who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. Several more verses here. 1 Peter 5, verses 6 and 7. Chad, could you look that up? 1 Peter 5, verses 6 and 7. Josh, John 14:27, Jordan, John 16, verse 33. Okay. How about the guy right behind you there? Oh, Darren, that's his name. Yeah. John 16:33. If you would look that up. And then Brother Steve, Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. All right, Chad, when you're ready.
1 Peter 5, verse 6, 7.
Yep.
Offer yourself in mighty hand to God, that you pay his due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cared for you.
That's right. Those are very good, very powerful verses. Humble yourselves, God will exalt you. Cast all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. And just like this church here, as I said before, God knew exactly what was going on. There was nothing happening to these people that God was not aware of. And God basically comes along and says, you're doing a good job. Just keep going. And what a blessing to have that stamp of approval. All right, John chapter 14, verse 27. That's right. The peace that only Jesus can give. And we'll read about that in Philippians chapter 4 here in just a few minutes. All right, Darren, chapter John 16, verse 33. That's right. Jesus is confirming that in the world and from the world, those who follow him will have tribulation. There will be difficulty, but Jesus tells us to be of good cheer. He has overcome the world. All right, Philippians 4, 6 and 7, Steve.
Be anxious. And the beast, which surpasses all understanding, the larger hearts of his gratitude.
That's right. The peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your heart and mind. And that is a beautiful thing, especially if we have spent time having anxiety fill our minds. If you've laid awake at night, anxious, fearful, worried. If we know what that is like, we know that's not a fun feeling. But those verses there in Philippians chapter 4 speak of God's peace keeping our minds, God's peace guarding our minds. The awareness and the presence of Jesus filling our mind to the point that those other things get crowded out. And I think sometimes, at least for myself, that's what I need to have happen, is to allow the presence and awareness of Jesus, of the power and presence of God, fill my mind so that there is not room for the fears and the anxieties of things that I myself cannot change. So there are a few verses that speak into overcoming anxiety or fear with God's peace. And those are precious promises that are very, very effective. So here's a couple things that are lessons that we can draw out of the letter to the church in Smyrna. Number one, I think, that will jump out to us pretty quickly, especially when we read on. A lesson for us is that wealth and comforts are hardly assets to Christianity. Does anyone want to argue that? If we're willing to hear you, if you want to, maybe later. Wealth and comforts are hardly assets to the Christian life. Those churches here that are addressed in Revelation, there are several that are known to be very wealthy, and one especially, and the message to those churches are not as good, are not as encouraging as the ones to this church. Now, I'm not saying that wealth and comfort are a bad thing. I'm not saying that at all. Don't get me wrong. But I don't believe that they are necessarily assets. If we have in life a goal of wealth and comfort, I think it will be, if that is our goal in life, it will be just the opposite of an asset. Wealth and comforts, and I said before, I do enjoy being comfortable, but we need to watch our focus in how we live our life. We need to allow the love of Christ to fill our heart, and the outflowing of that is love that serves. If we allow society to have its way, society's love, the love of wealth and comfort, will fill our hearts. And along with that will come society's anxiety. And then from that will flow out frustration. But rather, let's allow Christ's love to fill our hearts, and what flows out is service. All right. Another lesson for us today is that even though we don't deal with active persecution here, such as worry about being arrested, it's actually happening in Canada. People who read the Bible and quote the Bible and say, hey, the Bible says this. People are being arrested and jailed for doing that. So it seems like it's creeping closer. Who knows? Could happen. But quite the Bible studies we could have, I guess, if we were arrested. So they don't let us in anymore to do jail Bible study. Maybe that would be a way. But anyway, not campaigning for it. But there is no active persecution today, but there are still many things to cause worry and anxiety that can cause frustration, that can result in us wanting to or maybe actively lashing out at the problems around us. And what I want to say about that is that Jesus provides the answers to that worry and anxiety. And we have very real things that we deal with in life. I do not minimize that at all. We have very real things that do cause us to lay awake at night. They do cause us to pray and to be concerned. The encouragement that I need to receive and that I want to share with all of us is that Jesus says, keep pressing on, keep pressing on. We need to keep following him, allowing him to guide our lives. And number three, Jesus still says, fear not. No price is too great for eternal life. Fear not. We don't know what lies ahead. We don't know if what seems to be coming closer will be a part of our life. We don't know all of that. But Jesus still assures us that he knows what is going on. He sees all that is going on, and he assures us that the reward that is on the other side is worth any price that we may be asked to pay. And I believe that we can take great courage in that. We can overcome any anxiety through the peace that Jesus can give us. And I'd like if we could all be encouraged in that today, to continue on, to be strong. Brother Ken shared those very important and very meaningful verses with us. Stand fast, quit ye like men. I was thinking about anxiety, and I thought about this as Ken was sharing, that where I grew up, you just didn't see or hear men talking about fears, worries. I just remember very little of that. You're supposed to be a man. You're supposed to be strong. You're supposed to provide. And I think there is value in that, but I think there's also value in sharing heart to heart with our fellow believers. As much as we'd all like to look strong, like we have it together, I think guys are good at pretending. Maybe I speak for myself, I don't know. But we do well to share, to speak, to share with friends the things that we deal with. And through that, we can find much encouragement. And I appreciate the interaction that goes on here and the encouragement that comes out of that interaction. May we continue on doing that, continue on encouraging each other. And may God be glorified as we press on and allow His power to be at work in us for His honor.